Hey, hello everyone, and welcome to the Ukulele on the Ground podcast. My name is Aldrin Guerrero. Joining me is Mr. Kahai, the legend, Furigan. Say what's up, Kahai.
What's up? Yeah, they could hear
All
me,
right.
but they couldn't hear you. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. So there's no Aaron the Voice today. Where is Aaron the Voice, Kahai? Is he doing auditions for like Star Search? Is he, you know, is he doing an audition for like a Marvel movie? What is he doing?
Yeah, all of that. Yeah, he's you know, super busy, and
is he jet setting somewhere?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Doing tours with, like, I heard he was like, he was Bruno Mars's his stunt double. You know, like for whenever Bruno has to sing like a really high note or has to do a run that he can't do, they bring Aaron in and he sings that run instead,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think they call it like a stand-in, right? Or something.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. It's a musical stand-in for Bruno Mars. And for, you know, and for Paul McCartney and a bunch of Taylor Swift too, I heard.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
really expanding nowadays. Aaron Nakamura is, you know, he's a triple threat now. He's doing Sir Paul, he's doing Sir Bruno and Lady Taylor.
I think he's most well known for Taylor Swift, right? Like, I
oh,
think
yeah,
that's
I guess so.
Yeah, that's
I guess
who
so.
He probably stands in for the most. So yeah,
I think he does the O's in that Trouble song.
Oh
Trouble,
yeah,
Trouble.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's Aaron. Yeah, so if you listen to that song, Aaron's on going oh.
Mm-hmm.
Now where is Aaron, Kai?
Well,
should we disclose where he is, or should we just not even talk about it? Maybe not even talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think. Maybe if people are listening, they can maybe tell that we're all a little under the weather, and Aaron especially.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we decided, we told him, just take the day off. Like, don't worry about
take
it.
The day off. Yeah. So we're all, we caught stuff. All of us. Not all the same things. We didn't all catch the same thing, but I believe Aaron has been confirmed to have the worst.
Yeah.
Right? Let's just say that.
And me
Aaron,
and you don't have it, but we have something different, and
but still sick, still
yep.
sick. So all three of us are kind of under the weather, but Aaron confirmed very under the weather. Now that's what we should say. Okay, I think everybody's happy with that, right?
Yeah, that's good.
So, Kahai, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, you know, like since we're doing this from home, and I know people have been asking for this, right? People have been asking to see what I look like,
what
right?
What you look like? Oh, is this the reveal episode?
Yeah, so I set it up, you know, just for you guys, and I'm gonna show what I look like. Are you ready? I'm gonna come on screen.
Wait. This is like, this is monumental. Okay, can you like build it up first? You know what I mean? Like, so here comes a man, a legend, if you would. Okay, and not just this community, but in communities worldwide. This is a man who has saved many babies from burning buildings and many pregnant ladies from buses that's about to fall from bridges. We're talking about a legend that is a household name in every household that cares about doing good things. We're talking about Kahai, the legend Furigan. And the entire time he's remained anonymous, and he's remained that kind of guardian angel that we have. You know what I mean? You don't know what guardian angels look like. You don't need to know. All you need to know is that there's a Kahai, the legend, out there watching all of us. And for me, that helps me sleep a little bit better at night. You know what I mean? So here he is, the one, the only, Kahai, the legend, Furigan.
Yeah, and I'll just, you know, I'll just join you on stream. Like, I'll just walk on stream.
Oh, yeah,
like,
there it is. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it, guy.
You know, it's like just, right. I'm just right there.
Oh, there you are. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my cave, bud. Hey, nice to see you.
Yeah.
Let's change the angle. Hey, man. Wow. Say something so that people are like, that's just a picture. No. You can say stuff, right?
No, yeah, I can say stuff and look, like, I can, you know, I can even, if I do this, I can, like, move around a little bit, yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
so. Oh, no, you're this side. Oh, Kahai, oh, no. Can I just pat your head?
Thanks, I guess. That's fine. Whatever.
Good job, buddy. Good job. Good job,
Okay,
buddy. Good job,
thanks.
buddy.
Thanks.
Good job. Good
Okay.
job. Good job, Kai. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, you ready to do this?
Sure.
You ready to do this?
Yeah.
Okay, you good? All right. So here at the Ukulele on the Ground podcast, what we do is we answer all of your questions regarding and not regarding the ukulele, preferably the ukulele. What we do here is we provide some O's to your Q's, right, Kahai?
Yep.
Right? Yeah, provided some O's to your Q's. That means opinions to the questions that you may have about the ukulele. So, for example, if these people have a question about, like, I don't know, how to string my uke, what kind of, what's the best case, or how do I play this line or whatever, or how do I hold my ukulele? We can do that, right, Kahai?
Yep, yeah, we can do that. I kind of
Yeah,
feel
this is so
like
nice. This is so nice that you're, what?
maybe I'm distracting you, so maybe I gotta go, right?
No, 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 no. I think no. I think you're good. I think you can stay right. I think you stay right there, and it'll be good. So that's what we're doing today. We're answering or giving O's to all the Q's out there. Right? This is nice. I never get to interact with you in this kind of sense, you know, where it's like you're right next to this. It's kind of like having, you know, like a much dare I say handsomer Aaron next to me, you
Oh,
know. So th
well,
and
I don't
that
know
may
about
might be a
that.
little bit more distracting, but you know what? I'm a professional. We're gonna keep this. We're gonna keep together, and we're gonna do this. Okay, Kai? All
Okay.
right, all right. Okay, let's go. So, first question.
Yeah. So, and even because Aaron's not here, I thought like I'll give you a choice. Do you want a safe ukulele question, or do you want a little bit of a spicy ukulele question?
Ooh. You know what? Let's do both, but let's start with a safe one, and then let's up the spice level. I like spicy. I've been known to eat spicy food, so I've been known to answer some spicy questions as well.
Okay. So the safe question is, what is a genre of music, or I was thinking and or a musician that you like, or that you would want to see more of, that they don't really use ukulele, but you want to see them integrate ukulele into their music more?
So, they play a little ukulele or they don't play ukulele at all?
I was thinking that maybe it's like somebody who they don't even play ukulele at all, or they're not known for it at least, or they don't have any songs with it.
So you want me to name multiple people, just one person or one band or whatever?
However long you want to go, because I don't know how long you want to
Okay.
take on the spicy question too.
Ah, yeah, this is actually a pretty tough question because I've never really thought of that because all, you know, like all the music that I listen to, of course, like if I want to listen to ukulele, like there's already ukulele like bands or groups that I listen to. They're already there. But what band or soloist could use more ukulele? I don't know. Like just being from Hawaii, I think that like Bruno Mars and Silk Sonic. I think Silk Sonic could use it because the thing is Silk Sonic is kind of known to be, you know, like suave and debonair and stuff. So maybe an extension that if Silk Sonic uses ukulele, you know, people go like, man, that instrument is so suave and so debonair that like maybe it might rub off on people like me, you know, who play that as well. So I would like to see Silk Sonic play ukulele in their sets. That would be amazing. Just because I'm a big fan of Silk Sonic anyway, you know. Next, let's see. I'd like to see my favorite Filipino band, Parokya ni Edgar, or Eraserheads. Let's just put them in one category because they're basically Pinoy rock. Any of those two guys or those two bands, especially Parokya ni Edgar, you know, like I would have more of an opportunity to watch them than I would to watch Eraserheads. But yeah, so let's just say Parokya ni Edgar, because they're rockers, they're classic rockers. You know what I mean? Like they play rock music, but they do tend to dabble on other genres as well. So it's a big reason why I like them. But yeah, I think Parokya. And last but not least, I'm just gonna name my favorite bands. Basically, that's what I'm gonna do because I would like to see more ukuleles from them. The last one, of course, from Omaha. 311. I would like to see 311 incorporate a little ukulele in their music, you know what I mean? Like, or just maybe do some classic old, like, you know, old 311, but with an ukulele in there. I would like to see, you know, like, of course, things like Amber. Like, I would like to see some ukulele in a version of Amber. Like, but, you know, Nick Hexum, if you guys are looking for an ukulele player for just that one song, hit me up. Let me know. I would like to play some ukulele tracks on that version of Amber. But, you know, other stuff as well. Like I'll Be Here a While, I think, you know, an ukulele would be perfect in that song. But yeah, those are my top three artists or bands that I would like to see more ukulele on, which is, let's recap, okay? Silk Sonic, because I want the clout. And number two, Paroque and Edgar, because they're awesome and I listen to them a lot. I would love to hear more, any kind of ukulele, because I don't think I've ever heard ukulele in their albums. And number three, 311. I've not heard any ukulele in their albums as well, and I think that would be pretty interesting because they do some acoustic stuff, like, yeah, I'll Be Here a While, Whiskey and Wine, you know, like stuff like that. I think could use some good old ukulele in there. What about you, Kai?
Well,
What about you?
I think Silk Sonic is actually like a pretty good choice because I was thinking about it and like they haven't had ukulele, but I feel like they also wouldn't just throw a uke on, you know, like write a track with a guitar and just replace it with a uke just to throw it on. I feel like they would really like try to make good use of it.
Yeah. Before you see your next thing, because I want to comment on that, because usually like people will just see an ukulele in the studio and I'm guessing it's just like, we could use that thing, you know, like this track needs something very, you know, like very specific, something kind of innocent sounding, something tropical. Like, well, what about that thing? It's like, I guess we could put that thing, and then bam, you have Hey Soul Sister.
Okay.
And this isn't the spicy. Okay, what were you saying, Kai?
How did you say the song that I was exactly thinking of? How did you call out that song? No, I was thinking of there's this. Remember, guys, I'm super cool, right? I'm like the toughest, coolest guy.
Okay.
There's a guy who composes music for anime, Kevin Pengen, and I think he's used like classical guitar or like I don't know, like Spanish guitars before. And so when I heard that, I was thinking like maybe he could use ukulele, but I feel like that's already in the realm already. But like Silk Sonic, I thought was a good choice because it's like they haven't, as far as I know, they haven't done anything with uke, right? So it would be like almost brand new.
I don't think so. And I mean, they got kind of a 70s vibe, so it doesn't really, you know. But then again, the ukuleles were around in the 70s, and Bruno being from Hawaii and stuff like that, I felt like that was like a lob, you know?
But I think, that's like something I would be excited for. And even if like, not Silk Sonic, but if somebody took that like genre of their music and then tried to like translate it and use ukulele really well, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay, right on. So let's go with the, you want to go spicy already, or do you want to like, you know, turn up the heat? You can ask me another spicy-ish question. Do you want to go straight to spicy?
I'll ask you the spicy question then. Well, I think this is pretty spicy. Okay. What do you think is the biggest misconception in ukulele?
That's not so much as spicy as more like thought-provoking, I think. You know, the common misconception on the ukulele. I mean, let's get the normal ones out. It's like, one, it's not a toy. That's a common misconception, but I feel like that's a given, you know? Two, you can only play like Tin Pan Alley stuff. That's another kind of common misconception. Three, in that same vein, you can only play Hawaiian stuff with the ukulele. Although it works really well for both those genres, it's not just for that. Okay, so I think people in Hawaii would associate only with, you know, that's a common misconception for people here, or just like local music, you know, it doesn't just have to be for local music. And I think with with Jake's popularity, that's already kind of been shattered, like, I guess worldwide, not just in Hawaii. Another misconception is that it's like too easy, or like, you know, it's considered like not like a real like serious instrument. And I feel like that too with Jake's popularity has been kind of shattered. But those are still, I mean, they're still around, you know, like people still talk about the ukulele in that light, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say,
so
like,
if
I think like the commonest or the biggest misconception that people who get into ukulele receive is that it's like an easy instrument. And then it is a pretty easy instrument to start with. But after a while, like, the, you know, it can just, the difficulty can ramp up. So that's where people are like, oh, I thought this was easy. And then now it's like just so hard or whatever.
Yeah. Easy to learn. I mean, like, there is a reason why it was like in the book of Guinness, Guinness Book of World Records or whatever, as being like the easiest instrument to learn. It's super easy, you know? But it is like, just like any musical instrument, is super hard to master. You know, you can learn and play an instrument. You can learn and play anything, really. Not just an instrument. You can learn, play like a sport, a hobby, anything. But to master anything is of course going to be difficult. And that goes with ukulele. So for me, aside from those obvious, because those are, I feel like, givens, right? a common misconception that I feel with the ukulele is the price, honestly. You know what I mean?
Like,
I can't count like how many times we're at an ukulele festival or something, or I'm doing a show here on Kauai, and they're like, oh, you know, I want to buy an ukulele. I'm here on vacation, I want to buy an ukulele. Or like, oh, I saw this festival with all these ukuleles walking around, and I kind of wanted to, you know, I wanted to pick one up. Do you guys sell them here? You know? And then we're like, oh yeah, go over there by that booth or whatever. And of course, like, being a Kanalea artist, I'm like, oh, check out that Kanalea booth with the, you know, with the Islanders, if you're starting out. And, you know, and they look at the price, it's like, what, $200 for this thing? And it's just like, wait, what's, you know? And they're like, oh, I thought they were like $20 or $30. I'm like, what? Where do you find that? You know, like, I think for me is a top most common misconception of the ukulele is its price. A lot of people tend to maybe they go to Hawaii and like, and they'll go to the ABC store and like, you know, the one that does in tune and stuff like that, that's maybe like $20-$30. But I think with inflation, those things are maybe like $50 now, you know?
We always hear the argument, right? Like,
yeah,
if it but it's smaller than a guitar and it takes less material, so it should be less than a guitar, right? Or like the amount of material that it takes should equate to the price, I guess. But yeah. Like, you can say that about a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the ukulele, no matter like what the size is, yes, you're using more materials as you go up, but I feel that, like, you know, it really doesn't make that much of a difference in cost of making the thing. I think the cost to make an ukulele is relatively similar throughout the sizes, you know. But yeah, so I think you might be getting like a really good deal for your money by going like the soprano route, because the soprano, I guess, they have to kind of price it like lower than concert and tenor, just because of the size of that misconception. But I think it's about the same, because you're using, you know, like a what's that, book match piece of wood. And if you see a book match piece of wood for like a soprano, a concert, and a tenor, it's not that much difference, you know?
Yeah. So, I would even argue that there's some skill in making an instrument that's smaller, right? Like, smaller, you have to pack it in more. So,
Yeah, because it's just, you know, those I guess that much as far as materials, like, it's just the wood, but like all the hardware is the same, you know what I mean? The same amount of tuners, same amount of like strings and frets and saddle and all that stuff, like all the hardware things is pretty much the same in there. Same amount of bracing inside, though maybe smaller, but still, you know, like so I believe price, in the sense that like this is how much it costs like altogether. And I think sopranos, you know, you'll get the best bang for your buck. I feel if you're buying from like from like a really good luthier, like a Hawaii luthier.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. The next one is the misconception of like no one's ever plugged in an ukulele to like a distortion app. You know what I mean? Like I feel like every video that I see of like ukulele, like metal on ukulele, or like punk on uke, or like heavy distortion on uke, or whatever. Like I feel like there's a misconception that like, oh yeah, this, you know, like no one's ever done this before, or whatever. But like that's been explored so many times, and that I feel like is extended to like other things, like techniques, for example, you know, like tapping on the ukulele, or like harmonics and stuff. Like all of these have been explored, like at least in like the late 90s. It's been at least 20 years since those things have been explored on the ukulele. But maybe like for the common person, like they, you know, now they're being exposed to these things. But I think it's a misconception to think that like, man, there's like a brand new whatever thing like to the ukulele, where it's like it's people have been doing it for a long time, you know.
Yeah,
like techniques and like guitar tech. Maybe I should just say like guitarish or electric guitar techniques on the ukulele, including but not limited to like working with pedals and stuff. Like that's been done on the ukulele a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of things like on the ukulele, like people consider like, oh man, that must be like brand new, or I've never heard of it before. But
yeah,
it is an old instrument.
I only say that because like. Yeah, yeah. I only said because a lot of our shows, you know, like they were like, I've never heard the ukulele played that way before. I'm like, I'm so glad you've never heard of like Troy Fernandez or Jake, or you know, like anyone like from my realm, because that's that, like if you heard anyone from my realm, it's just like it's just a typical Tuesday or Wednesday for these guys, you know. But yeah, it might be a good misconception in some ways, where like you can use it as a shock factor if you're a performer, you know. You're like, now I'm gonna put distortion on my ukulele, it's gonna sound amazing, and it might be good in that sense, because that misconception, people are like, I wasn't expecting that, you know. So I think that's a good one, and not necessarily a bad misconception. I'm trying to come up with a third one.
I wanted to take it back maybe to the second, yeah, you know, like the price misconception, okay, too. And I just watched video.
Yeah.
And I just watched a video where somebody was talking about what is like budget audio equipment for them. And they're saying like, you know, for some people, budget is $100 and less. For other people, it's like $300 and less. And then for some people, like, you know, crazy, they're like $1,000 and less. But for you, you know, like, and we're not saying that this is for everybody, but what would you say is like, then if people are like, oh, how much should a budget ukulele be? What is like, what do you think is a good, what is the range for budget?
I feel if you're stepping into it for the first time, you know, like if you want like a budget one to kind of start out with, I'd say anywhere between like $100, $200 for a budget one for your first budget ukulele, you know. I mean, you can definitely get ukuleles in the $50 to $100 range, but if you just put in like another $50, you know, like you'll get a much better quality ukulele for, you know, for your money. Because say you saved up $50 to buy your first uke and think, you know, like I'm just gonna get the cheapest ukulele at the $50 price point. If you save up another $50, like you can get a really nice one, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
At that $100 range or whatever. But I feel that like between $100, $200, that's like, you know, it's a perfect range for buying your first working and long-lasting ukulele. I think that's very important to say, that like that's what you're going to get in that range. You're going to get something that works, you're going to get something that tunes, you're going to get something that is going to last for like a long time.
Yeah. And I think like we also have that experience where people buy, you know, ukuleles from ABC, like the $50 ukuleles we're talking about. And they're like, oh, I found this one and it works, right? And you might be able to get it to work. But I feel like after you play it for a while, then you start to realize like, oh, this isn't really something that I want to keep playing on, right? And I feel like that's like the quickest to outgrow. So yeah, I would say like $100 is like pretty good to just get you off the ground at the first start, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, $100, $200, like if you're feeling fancy, you know, like a little bit $200, or if you're looking to get like, because we talked about like how bigger ones like can be worth a little bit more, you can get like a concert or a dinner at that like $200 price, and it's gonna be nice and decent.
I think we always recommend like $100 for like parents who are buying their kids ukes just to see if they'll even like play it and continue to play it. But then like, yeah, if you can get a ukulele for like $250, that'll take you like pretty far. You can like keep playing that thing for like a while without like thinking about like should I upgrade now or like, you know. And even then, like we talk to people who have like super expensive ukuleles, but they still love the $200, $250 ukulele that they started off with, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can really only come up with those two. I mean, aside from the like, I put out the obvious, and I put out a lot of obvious ones, but the not so obvious ones, I feel like are those two things. One is definitely the price of the ukulele. People don't, you know, I guess people who are not exposed to ukulele, and is going to it for the first time, that's like I didn't know how much they were worth, you know, and two, that like, oh, I didn't know you could do that, or I didn't know there's like, you know, you could plug an ukulele into an amp with like with distortion or overdrive or wah or whatever, you know, like phaser, or you can loop stuff or whatever, you know, like it's those are great, but I mean they've been done many times. I'm not saying that like people don't do them well. I just think that people have a misconception of they haven't done it before. But
I mean, even when you're talking about like Troy and Jake, right? If you ask them, they'll tell you who they were inspired by. And I'm sure the people who
That's
they
true,
were
that's true.
inspired by were
Yeah,
inspired by other
I've done it
people too.
before.
So yeah, it's always like building. Yep.
Those I feel like are my answers, man.
You want to take
Okay, cool.
some audience?
Yes, sir. That's yes, sir. We don't, you know, we don't want to pretend like they don't exist, right? Like we are live right now. This is the Ukulele on the Ground podcast. We are live every Monday, 1 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time. Rain or shine, sickness or in health, we are going to be here, right, Kahai? Unless we're really sick. You know, unless we're
I
really sick.
guess so.
Unless we're really tired or something. Or just we just don't feel like doing it, I guess, right? Sometimes. Okay. What?
I feel like I have to leave for this one because I have no like standing in this question, so I'm just gonna I'll just take a break, you know. I'll let you answer it. You take it off for here. But so
Okay.
Chris said, how do you feel about Djokovic winning the US Open?
Oh my gosh. Oh. I mean, at least he didn't ask for like, how did it feel like when Daniil Medvedev like beat your boy Carlos Alcaraz on the semifinals, denying you of a Djokovic versus Alcaraz final? I think that should have been the question. How do I feel about Djokovic winning the U.S. Open? I mean, Djokovic is the GOAT, you know, like he's like, well, at least one of the GOATs. For me, Federer's the real GOAT and stuff. But no denying Djokovic. One of the greatest players of all time, if not the greatest player of all time. That was not, you know, that was not surprising. I know Medvedev has beaten him before in the very same Open, I believe. But the way that Djokovic is playing nowadays, he's unbeatable. Only Alcaraz can really like stand up to Djokovic nowadays. Just those young legs, man. That's what you need for that, you know. Like, but hey, props to Medvedev. He played a hell of a tennis match. Like, in that semi with Alcaraz, and he deserved that. He deserved that. I was just shocked, and I was just kind of, you know, I was kind of sad that I was robbed of another Djokovic Alcaraz final. But I'll be okay. I'll live.
Should I come back now?
Yes. I
Okay.
know. Yeah. We like sports, and we don't care who knows. But oh, before we get to the next thing, I actually got a really cool I got a really cool package. I'm gonna show you like this, so I don't show the address and stuff. But we got one from Juan Ojeda, our UU Plus member, good friend, regular at the you know at the private lessons, regular at the open mics and stuff. We see him a lot. So we got sent this really cool thing. Guess what it is? What's in the box, guy? What's in the box? Or what's in the package?
I don't. Isn't that movie like that phrase "What's in the box"? Isn't that like not a good thing? So I don't know. Yeah, I hope it's something good. Yeah.
Okay, it is a piece of paper. But inside this piece of paper, is a Native American flute.
What?
Did we talk about wanting a flute in this show? Because he gave us one.
It's
pretty amazing.
No, thank you though. Yeah, it looks beautiful.
I mean, thank you, Juan. This is like, you mind if I blow on this guy?
Nope, no. Go ahead.
It is our flute.
You know, yeah, we gotta
the three of us. Yeah, all right. All right. Let's see. I'm gonna give it the inaugural blow on this one. Nice. I'm gonna learn how to play this thing. I'm gonna Google up Native American flute on the ground, and I'm gonna learn how to play this. I'm gonna learn how to play "Still the One" on this just for Juan.
I'm glad that it actually worked.
I'm tying, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Yeah, I guess if I blew on it and it's like, oh, the equivalent of like a $20. No, this is legit, dude. This looks like fine craftsmanship. Okay.
Or it's like if you blow on it and the like a party favor, you know, like it rolls out or something. That's all that it does. Or it makes a kazoo sound. It's like
yeah. It has a certificate of authenticity.
Oh my
gosh. Which is this tiny piece of paper. I guess that can work as a COA nowadays. You know, Donald Coolidge from the Navajo.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's Native American flute. Okay. Cool beans. I'm gonna learn this guy, and I'm gonna play some cool stuff.
Yeah, you know I'm cool. I don't know what that means.
Not dork it up.
No.
Yeah, super cool, man.
I wasn't
super cool, buddy. Don't even make like we watch sports. Remember?
Yeah. I wasn't thinking of that exact song when you pulled out that flute. That wasn't the thing I was thinking of. Not at all. Okay.
Oh man, I'm gonna learn it.
Okay,
cool. Next one. Thank you so much, Juan. Thank you, Juan, for the awesome, cool gift. I'm gonna have to learn that. I'm gonna have to look up some flute on the ground videos.
Okay.
So next question. Audience.
Andre said, at the weekend, I was at a large trade fair guitar summit with a lot of beautiful instruments, a few with two necks, for example, ukulele and bass in one instrument. Can we make real music with it?
Yeah. I mean, you can make real music with anything that makes real, like, tuned music that's in tune. And, I mean, I would say even not with that. Like, even if the whole thing is off tune and it's made super terribly, you can just, you know, whack on it, like, just to play some drums and stuff. You can still make music with it. But in this case, with the two neck ukulele and bass, I feel like you don't gotta grab another instrument. Say you're playing a show, you know, and you're playing ukulele for one song, and then you're playing bass for another song. Yeah, right. Or you can play bass, make that loop, and then play the ukulele on top of that. You know, there's so much stuff that you can do with like a two-headed instrument, like bass and ukulele, or even with a two-headed ukulele. Like one could be like an 8-string, and one could be like a 4-string ukulele, which is pretty common with guitars being like a 12-string and a 6-string, right, Kai?
Yeah.
So, you know, with that, like it's pretty common. You know, like you can maybe do like a rhythm part with the 12-string, and then when you're ready to do the solos, you go to your 6-string. Same thing. 8-string, you're just gonna be doing your strums and stuff, and then you're gonna be doing your, you know, your Troy Fernandez solos with the 4-string, because it's tough to be doing those banjo lines with an 8-string. It works, but I feel like that's what a two-headed ukulele could do. So very much so, you can make beautiful music with that.
And when people like see two-headed guitars and other stuff, they ask like, "Oh, then why doesn't everybody play it?" And the reality is it's heavy, so you don't want to play it all the time. Yeah. Like you see the musicians who play it, and then they're like, "Yeah, I like using this, but I don't want to be carrying this for like a whole concert or something." So that's why I'll change out for one song. Yeah.
Yeah. So very, you know, uncommon but not rare. Uncommon to have like two-headed instruments, but they do have, you know, like do have their purpose, and it could be three, right? Like I've seen three-necked instruments and stuff before, and those work out fine to be like a 12 string, a 6 string, and a bass or whatever, you know. I'd like to see a 12 string, 6 string, 4 string ukulele. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I think with the size of the body, it might not work, but whatever.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, as they add more and more, it just kind of like, that's kind of what you have to factor into it. It becomes more unwieldy to like play. So you can do it. It's like totally possible. But then you probably just have to figure out a way for you to play it really well. You know, you can't just like, oh, I'll just play like a bass. I'll play this like an ukulele and I'll play this like a guitar or whatever. You have to like kind of figure your way around it too. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it works as a solo. Like I said, you can loop stuff. And it also works like especially works in a band because in a band you can have multiple roles and stuff, and that just puts your multiple roles in one instrument. Yeah. Okay. Next.
Okay. So Kui Lee said, how do you teach ukulele students how to improvise? Jam uke solos, please. What have you found works best for you? By the way, cool flute, nice sound. You go send your said flute.
Oh, how do you teach how to pa'ani or solo with the ukulele? I live by two words as far as doing pa'ani on the ukulele, doing improvisation, which is just press. Like, just press it. If you're, you know, like, if you're playing and, you know, I always jam with my friends and I'm always just like, okay, cool, just like mix solo. You don't even have to leave the chords that you're already playing. So if you're playing like C, F, and G, you can do. You can just press press. And I mean, you can leave that, you know, those chords and just play a note. If you don't play the right note, whatever, move on to the next note, because the correct note is always just gonna be a half step away. Yeah, so this note would be wrong in that key, but this note is correct in that key. There's always ways to make it. And plus, if it's improvisation, then that means you made it up. That means that's your solo. So, you know, maybe you meant to play bad notes, or maybe you meant to play like notes that are, I shouldn't call them bad notes. I should call them, what's the word that the kids are using nowadays, Kai? Dissonant notes? Yeah, dissonant notes.
That's what I was thinking.
So if you wanted to play a dissonant solo, maybe that's their intention, you know? But the trick is to just press. Now, the question is, how do I teach people how to do that? So if I'm jamming with someone and I'm teaching them on the spot, that's kind of what I do. But how to pa'ani, we do this in Solo Secrets Revealed. We have a video series called Solo Secrets Revealed, which is just like figuring out one scale and moving that scale up and down the fretboard. And that's really all you need to know. Like, a lot of people think that I hate scales, but scale, if you think of it in patterns, is not that bad. So for example, the pattern to a C, like to a C major scale, you can just go 0-2, 0-1-3, 0-2-3. Super common. And you know, you can think of it, you can visualize stuff, like you can visualize a diamond for, you know, perhaps, because it is like 0-2s and 0-1-3, right? And then 0-2, that's that diamond. And then 3 right at the end. So you can look at it that way. But for me, it lives as 0-2, 0-1-3, 0-2-3, 0-2-0-1-3, 0-2-3. Now, you can move that up and down. So if your 0 changes, for example, if your 0 is then the second fret, whatever that 0 is, that's the major scale that you're playing. So in this case, D, so if you make 2 as your 0, so 0-2, 0-1-3, 0-2-3. Does that make sense? I just plugged in that same kind of diamond formula here, but then started, I just pretended that like this 0 fret here, my nut, is on the 2nd fret. So here, I'll play the 2nd fret. So here's 0, here's 2, 0, 1, 3, 0, 2. There's that diamond, right? And then you're playing in the key of D, and you can kind of move that up and down just by figuring that out. And that we call that a box or an island, you know? So by sticking to that, and then in Solo Secrets Reveal, we talk about doing a Mixolydian scale. So you have that regular major scale and a Mixolydian scale, and using those two, you can kind of go up and down your fretboard. But by knowing the major scale, those are notes, as long as you know the key, to the notes in your solo, then all you need to do is figure out rhythm. So if the rhythm is, so making up a rhythm is the hard part. The notes are there. The notes are, you know, are laid out. You can use these notes, 0-2, 0-1-3, 0-2-3, to play, you know, your improvisation, your pani, your solo, whatever you want to call it. Those are the notes in there. Okay? Now, but how are you gonna play those notes? The rhythm that goes behind playing those notes is the hard part. So if you have if you were to just like tap a beat, okay, that is like not that same exact beat, or you can even tap a beat that's exactly that. So you have da 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 da. I don't know if you guys can see, but I'm tapping on my desk here. Now, so if we have that da 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 da, you can use that rhythm, play and plug in any of those notes that we just did with our little diamond or island or box, whatever you want to call it. So right, that's the rhythm. Da 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 da. You can play whatever random, and like I said, you can play the wrong notes, just press, and then just on the next beat play the right note. It's totally fine. Just press, make it like you meant to do it. On the next note, go to the correct note, play it with some authority, and you should be all good. But really, that's it. That's the basics of it. If you want to learn the whole thing, I believe, and this is perfect. I don't mean to sound like a, you know, like one of those guys just shilling and stuff. But we have isolated the Solo Secrets Reveal. So if you want to learn how to solo, how to pani, how to create improvisation, we do have that as a standalone series that you can get over at shop.ukuleleontheground.com. Right? Can I get it? Can I get it, Kai? Can I get it? Can I get it here? shop.ukuleleontheground.com. You can get the full course on doing that, but that's basically what I teach. And then, you know, just to give you a sample, that's like island number one, and you have a bridge to, you know, to that island, and you have the Mixolydian island. For those of you who have watched that, you're like, oh, I know what he did there. He did the first island, went to the bridge, and went to the second island, and started going crazy, and went back to the bridge, then went back to the first island again. Or you just jump over that island to that island, and then maybe go to the next one over here. That's what we teach over at Solo Secrets Revealed. Get it now at shop.ukuleleontheground.com.
Yeah.
Right, Kai.
Yep.
Thank you for the Sorry. Question. Yeah. I didn't even mean to, you know, to go into salesman mode.
Yeah. One piece of advice that I like that you get. One to piece. People, one. It's real. No. The one piece of advice that I know you give to people that I like is that I think a lot of people who start improvising, they get intimidated by the amount of notes that they can play, and so you tell them.
Not to mention that.
Start off with just improvising using only one note, and then build up to two, then build up to three. And I think that really does help, and it's a good advice, because even when people improvise using only the scales, you can kind of tell, like, when they're playing the scale up and down, and they're just, like, repeating the scale in different ways, right?
Yeah.
Where I feel like if you limit yourself to one, two, and three notes, you kind of learn how to, like, make the most out of it and make it sound musical, even if you know that's all you have to play.
So Kai is absolutely right, and I forgot about that, where, like, I showed you all the notes you can go, but should you hit all those notes? Sometimes the answer is no, because we have really, like, impactful melody lines that are just a few notes, right? So, for example, we broke that down and just isolated the main melody, it's just... which is 1, 2, 3, 4 notes in there. But like per measure is maybe 1 or 2 notes per measure. Right? So if you have, once again, that diamond that I was talking about, or that island, if you have da 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 da, you can do that da da da, that rhythm that we came up with on one note. All good. Now imagine what you can do with two notes. Maybe this the next one here, or if we're sticking to our diamond or island and stuff, maybe this one and this one. Yeah, so you can go, that's two notes. Or maybe, yeah, let's just do this, let's just do this next one, which is, so it's that same rhythm of, but we just added notes to that rhythm. And like, the less notes that you use, actually the more memorable the solo is, because I can remember solos like, rather than, you know, if you're playing like 100 notes versus 1 or 2 notes, my mind is going to remember the 2 notes rather than the 100 notes that you play. So keep it simple, keep it melodic, and keep it fun.
Yeah, that I was gonna say, like, too.
Sorry. Out of nowhere. Wow. Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, let me know when you come back.
Okay, let me try that again.
All right, okay.
I'm back. I'm coming back.
Oh, hey. Nice seeing you. Nice seeing you.
Yeah, I was
there.
I was gonna say, it's not the same, you know, like improvising is a skill set that you have to learn and you have to practice to get better at.
But, of course.
But there is like some merit in like learning the melodies to other songs, and when you're improvising with somebody and then like you're playing, you know, you guys are just going back and forth, to just like bust out like a pre-made melody already, and to like throw it to them, and if they know it, you know, they'll just like, they'll be like, oh, you're playing this song over this thing. It's like kind of like a remix or a mashup, and you can kind of have that in your back pocket too, right? So it's like, and that's also building your skill of like just kind of knowing where notes lead to, or like what makes a melody interesting, what makes things better. So one example that I thought of was like, you're playing with Jake, right? And I think you guys were playing Breezin, and didn't Jake break out like, what is it? The doe, a deer, a female deer.
Something like that. Yeah.
And then it's like when, as you guys are cutting heads, right? Like just to have that like little piece in there is like, you could tell like people were just like, whoa, that's, I wouldn't expect that in there, right? And jazz musicians do that all the time too. So yeah, there's a, if you're, even though it's not exactly the same as improvising, it's not bad to have 1 or 2 like phrases just in your pocket that like when you feel like, the time calls for it. Yeah, I would just pull this out or whatever, you know? Yeah. And it's like a callback to
my favorite one is actually in band, like, and I was in jazz band, and this was maybe like 8th grade jazz band. It's a middle school jazz band, but Gabe Baltazar played with us, and one of the guys in the high school class, like Chad Nishimura, he was playing, and they were like improv, like, you know, battling each other and stuff, and Chad was playing Barry sax, and Gabe Baltazar was playing, I believe, a soprano sax. And they're battling it out, duking it out and stuff with like some cool solos and whatever. And then all of a sudden, like for a good maybe 4 measures, Gabe Baltazar played that like that Benny Hill thing. Just went, you know, like on a different direction, and like me and a bunch of people were like, "Wow, sick!"
Yeah,
it was pretty cool. And that was my favorite, like Like, what the heck was that moment?
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know, like when you get to that level, right? It's like, it is cool to just like put a bunch of notes into like one thing. But then when you get to a high enough level, it really does take like something like that came out of left field. Like, I don't even know like where you got that idea from that to like surprise other people. Right. So it is cool to just have that, those kinds of things.
It's fun, man. Like, I think improv should be fun, because improv is just like having a musical conversation with somebody. You know what I mean? Like, you can you can have a serious conversation with people, but you can also have just like a fun conversation with your friend. And if you watch like that that improv of like myself, say Calais and Abe, we're doing Breezin, the three of us, and that was just like talking story between three friends who were just like kind of fooling around. So when Abe went with that like kind of Arabic scale that he put out, we're like, oh come on, that's kind of like your friend telling just like a really funny joke, you know? And we're like, all right, you're the funniest, you know?
Yeah, or it's just like, you know, when somebody's like, oh, have you ever heard of this before, or have you seen this before, they're just trying to show you something else, right? So
kind like that, like, or in I guess in Abe's sense, it's like, hey guys, I learned French, or I learned Arabic, check this out, you know? Like, and he just started speaking to us in Arabic. We're like, whoa, what? You know, we don't even understand you. We don't understand how that works. Exactly. We're just like, we don't understand how that works, like, ukulele-wise, you know? We can usually converse with you, but you're like at a whole different level. So,
yeah.
It's really cool. I dig improv. I dig cutting heads in general. It's not a competition thing. I feel like it's my favorite way of getting to know a musician, you know, like because you can really tell, you know, or you can really get to know a musician by the notes that they choose, how they, you know, they choose to play, and if they choose to play it playful, or if they're, you know, like choose to be aggressive. Like, there's so much things that like that improv like will reveal about a person, you know what I mean? And like, for example, when me and I don't want to drag Matt under the, you know, and under the bus, but I'm gonna have to talk about this one right here. So Matt and I in like one of the concerts that we did here on Ukulele Underground, where we featured Matt and we played Body Surfing, you know, like he just wanted to sit down and have a nice conversation with me, and I'm like, no, people are watching, like people want that like kind of like chaotic like solo, like really fast, really crazy solo. So I'm egging him on, you know, I'm like, hey, let's go, let's give these people a show, you know. But Matt just wanted a nice conversation, like he kept everything super safe, you know, with the solos, and I'm like, I'm working too hard, I'm just like, ah, I guess Matt doesn't want to, if Matt doesn't want to play, I guess we don't play, we'll just play safe, like improvisations, you know, like. And because when, you know, when I'm with say like Calais or Abe or Jake, you know, all those people that cut heads with, it's like, hey, there's some people are watching. Let's have a good conversation, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it, you can really tell a lot. And if I don't know a person and they want to just kind of like improvise with me or like do blues solos or whatever, I can always tell if, you know, like if a person's trying to make a statement, like, oh, you know, like take this on for size, you know, try this on, like, or whatever, I'm just like, oh, okay, you know, I can usually tell when somebody like shows their teeth, kind of show, so to speak, you know, or if somebody's just cruising, like that's, I dig when people just cruise and people just kind of have fun and we just like do a back and forth kind of conversation instead of like, oh, let's duke it out kind of, you know, kind of thing. I remember doing Live Aloha the first time over in Seattle. I met Arden Fujiwara for the first time, like in person. And I'm like, hey, Arden, let's jam. And he's like, oh, let's do some blues and stuff. I'm like, oh, right on, Mr. Blues guy, you know? And he was, you know, he was being very like kind of just respectful of just like, like, you know, I don't want to like poke the tiger, you know, because I don't know Aldrin. Like, I think he's going to destroy me or whatever in this. But like, he was playing like nice, just nice blues lines and stuff. And at the same time, that's what I come back with, just like some nice blues lines. This guy is not like, you know, not trying to like to pick a fight. He just wants to play music. And I can tell that from just improvising with him. So it's a nice way of getting to know somebody musically.
Yeah. I think I don't know, this maybe Aaron is trying to talk about a specific time, but he said classical gas with Rio. Was that there,
oh,
like an improv?
Yeah. passing a gas in Rio. And yeah, getting to know Rio in that bus, because like he's, I think like he does this really crazy version of classical gas, which I think is from like Chris Fuchigami. I think that's like the basis of Rio's classical gas. And I'm just like, hey Rio, come here, let me show you how to play that thing. So there's that. And then I just did this like cool key change, and I'm like, and then I just went all the way up in Rio. I was like, all right, I get it, Mr. Funny Guy. And I was just like, and that became like a huge inside joke the whole time we were on tour. And I would just kind of look at Rio. I'm like, hey, Rio. He would laugh. You know, it's kind of, it's a great way of getting to know somebody. Just kind of improvising. Like, let me show you how I play classical gas.
Yeah, I feel I feel like in improvisation, like, musicians have entire conversations with each other that like the audience doesn't necessarily catch, and it is a lot of like inside jokes, right, where it's like, or they even you know, you're trying to sneak something into the song just for that one exact other person to be like, I saw what you did, like you snuck that in. And that's like the whole that's the whole idea of the lick, right? Like that's why like the lick has like kept going, you know, and it's become like a meme in the music community to be like, you heard what I did, I snuck it in that last song, did you get that? And then, you know, you come back and it's like, oh, I snuck it in this song too, right? So yeah,
you hit the nail, because that's exactly what happened. Like, so we were playing songs like to improvise and stuff, and we tried to like to sneak that in every single chance that we had it. And I think it was it might have been Korea. Like, we, you know, Rio was playing with us, and we all kind of did, you know, like I think Sunday morning or whatever together. Like, and I snuck that in, and I looked at Rio, and he just, I remember seeing like a big smile from him. And this is, yeah, this is a nice conversation between friends, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But okay. Cool. Now you're making me miss the good old days, buddy. Hey, where'd you go?
Yeah, I'll come back.
Oh, sorry. Oh, hey. You gotta say when you come in. Don't just show up and like, I'm here, you know? Let's see. Do we have time for one more?
Yeah.
Is there any more questions?
We have
one more. We're not doing anything after this, right? I'm at home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think this is Chris and Sue, and they said, does the curl in the expensive woods actually improve sound, or is it just aesthetics? Also, what are the pros and cons of slotted headstocks?
Wow, I thought it was going to be like a quick question. It is a question. No, all good. I love this, actually, because there's some people that would say yes and some people that would say no, you know, like to both of these questions, as far as like, say, does the curl in the woods improve the sound? Or is it just for aesthetics? Some people would say so. Some people would say not. Because I guess if we're like just talking scientifically, the physics of it, you know, you want that board to, or the soundboard to kind of vibrate, right? So ideally, you want that soundboard to not be curly, because it is just like one flat, you know, one flat grain kind of thing, you know? And if you make music with it, that one grain can kind of have a lot more vibration. But some people swear that like curly koa sounds better than regular, you know, like straight koa, or curly this is better than curly, or than straight that, or quilted this, or a bear claw this or that, you know. Some people will say that they swear those sound better. And the thing is, you can't really compare. But I believe that just like, when you really think about it, like fibers wise, that's what makes sense as a straight grain. But I don't know, like I think a lot of it is the conception of beauty, where like you see it and it's a beautiful instrument. So already in your mind, you're like, this must play beautifully. So if you play it and it's like it's at a good level, because I mean, if you have a curly, you know, curly ukulele, I'm guessing it's a like a in like a higher end ukulele that you're playing with, you know, with the curls on it. If you see it, and aesthetic wise, if it looks beautiful, you're like in your mind already. You already have this, like, you know, you have this, not misconception, but you know, you already have this in your mind that it's gonna sound good because it looks good, you know. Because no one wants to be disappointed by looks. It's like, oh, that uke looks beautiful, but it sounds terrible. Like, you don't want to hear that. So I think that is a big factor. And also a big factor on, like, if you see a straight grain ukulele, you don't really think twice about, like, does it sound good? You're just like, oh, I just play it. It's just my ukulele. But then, like, when some people play, you're like, man, this uke sounds amazing or whatever. Because, you know, why does it sound so good? You're like, I don't know. It's just whatever I beat around. But the straight grain in that might play a role. So it really depends. And same thing with the slotted headstock. So for me, there are two reasons why I go with a slotted headstock. One, so that I could use these Gilbert tuners, because these Gilbert tuners only come as a slotted headstock tuner. Gilbert doesn't make regular tuners. And Gilbert tuners are locking tuners. I'm pretty aggressive with my playing, so I need tuners that lock the intonation as much as possible. I know I still tend to go off tune if I'm going really hard at it, or if I'm bending super, you know, super high or anything like that. They do still tend to go off, but imagine how much they'd go off if they weren't locking tuners. So these are like locking tuners. They're very heavy duty, and they're same thing. Like they're beautiful, you know. Like this tuner on the side here, you can see it's like got these like nice, like, inlays. These are abalone inlays, and this is ebony that, you know, that's there. But and they're super light. Like, I like these tuners for my ukulele. The second reason is the fact that with slotted headstocks, it directs the string in the same direction as it is on the bridge. So I don't know if that makes a difference, but to me, I kind of like to consider string travel. So what that means for me is the string is traveling this way, right? So we'll just talk about the bridge for now. It goes this way and it goes down. So right, it goes straight, then it goes down, it goes into the you know, into the soundboard, or into the bridge, into the soundboard. Okay, so for me, I like that, and I like the fact that Kanilea uses the like the bridge pins to direct that string travel in, and uses, you know, the bridge and the whole soundboard to vibrate. Not necessarily meaning that, like, if you have a tie bar bridge, it doesn't use the whole thing. It works as well. I mean, you know, like, Kamaka's been doing it for over 100 years, and it's been working for them. But I like that it does that. It directs it down. So when we turn it the other way, with slotted headstocks, it does the same exact thing. It directs it down. So it's kind of, you know, if the string travel is the same direction, it doesn't go here and it goes to the side, like how normal, like, you know, let's see here. I have this one. So with this ukulele, sorry for the dust. With this ukulele, it goes straight, right? And then it gets curled to this side like this. So straight down and then to the side. Whereas this, and then it goes straight down and inside, right? Whereas the slotted headstock, it goes in the same direction. So this one goes down, and so does this one. Not, you know, same thing. Like, there's no, you know, there's no way of, like, of telling if that makes a sound difference or not. But, you know, for me, I like to direct my string travel same directions for both sides. So, and of course, like, aesthetically, it just looks beautiful. Like, I think slotted headstock ukuleles look really elegant, and they give it that kind of classical guitar look to it. But it's like, you know, but it's an ukulele, so you got that, like, nice playful size of the ukulele. And but if you put, like, a slotted headstock on it, you know, like, I like this beefy slotted headstock. I have another ukulele here from Kanilea that has, like, the smaller one, which I mean, I'm not, like, I like this one better. Let's just say I like this one better. And it does look really, really beautiful. You know, like, you do pay more to have the slotted, but I think it's worth it in terms of aesthetics and in terms of string travel.
Yep.
And you can use Gilberts on it. So if this wasn't slotted headstock, or this kind of thick style slotted headstock from Kanilea, then I really couldn't use the Gilberts on it if it wasn't.
Yeah. I think something that I wanted to say about the wood thing is like variance between even pieces of wood from even the same type of wood, but pieces of wood can differ greatly. So you can get like something that is like maybe easier to get wood that sounds amazing. And then you can get like a rare piece of wood that is like, oh, it doesn't sound quite as good, you know, or whatever. But like, I think the... The thing about it, though, is that when you're buying from a reputable company and you're buying, like, Curly Cola or something, it's a higher guarantee that that piece of wood will probably sound good, you know? Whether it sounds good, like, straight off of the bat or it'll age into a really good ukulele, too. So that's kind of what you're getting when you buy...
But is that like, because of the wood?
Like I would say,
is that because of the wood or is it because of the craftsmanship, you think?
I think it's both, you know, and I think like just with the I know like with at least Kanilea, like they make sure that the wood that they pick out is gonna be good for ukuleles, right? So when you buy something that is like, oh, this is more expensive because of the curly wood and all these things, it's like, is it it's kind of weird to compare it to something that's like not curly or whatever, and then you can find ukuleles that sound great that aren't curly or whatever, but that's kind of what you're paying for, right? Is like the guarantee or like the more assured guarantee that this is a good ukulele. This is a high quality ukulele made out of like high quality material too.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, one of my best sounding ukuleles, this one. Straight grain, no curls, no UV finish. It's just, you know, like, then this. Now I'll play the other one, which this one sounds really good too. It's, I mean, this is also a straight grain, but. Yeah. And you can hear the difference, you know, between the two. Not just a low G or whatever, but that one just kind of rings out a lot more. And yeah, I mean, this one's heavily modded, you know, with the with the clear pick guards, and there's like the pickup inside. There's lots of things that are dampening the sound, but still, you cannot beat that like that projection that this one does. Yeah. I think I'm okay. All right, now I believe that's it, right? Like we answered a bunch of questions. We're over time, but you know, that last one was really good. Thank you so much, Chris and Sue, for your question. Thanks everybody for all the other questions that you've asked us for today's show. Kahai, so wait, where'd you go?
I'm right here.
Oh, hey, okay. All right. Okay. Now, anything you want to say before we leave? Get well soon, Aaron, perhaps?
Yeah.
Get well soon, Aaron. Get well soon, Kahai, also, you know, you. Let's see. If you guys want to learn how to play ukulele, check out ukuleleunderground.com. We're always here to help and always here to help you grow into the ukulele player that you want to be and take you to the next level. I think that's the slogan, right? That's UU Plus, take you to the next level. Sign up for UU Plus to take you to the next level. That includes like our wide selection and library of videos and stuff and many, many, many others, okay? So yeah, ukuleleunderground.com. All right, so learn a song or two from there. Learn how to play the ukulele. Once again, if you want to if you want to learn how to improvise, go to shop.ukuleleunderground.com, shop.ukuleleunderground.com. Pick yourself up the Solo Secrets Revealed and reveal the secrets to soloing. Yeah, and I'm not here.
Aaron put in the chat that Solo Secrets isn't a part of the shop yet, but it might be coming soon. So, but soon, the other soon, stuff are soon. There too. Yeah.
yeah. The other stuff, you know, I believe we have other lessons in there. I thought it went up already, but be on the lookout for that. But you know what? While you're waiting, you can still check out shop.ukuleleontheground.com. And we talked about ukuleles in the $200 range. We definitely have ukuleles in that range available over at shop.ukuleleontheground.com. Or if you want to get yourself a nice and fancy Aldrin Guerrero model, Kanile ukulele, get your Aldrin Guerrero models there. It has this particular inlay. You see that? It's like that Mario mushroom with the hat and the ukulele. This is the Aldrin Guerrero model. It has my signature in it and stuff. But this is the Redwood version of my model. But they always use master grade koa, curly koa for front, back, and sides of all the Aldrin Guerrero models. So I believe it's one of the only models that you can get master grade koa, like just right off the bat. Usually you have to custom make an instrument in order to have access to Kanilea's master grade koa. But if you get an Aldrin Guerrero ukulele, automatic master grade koa. Yeah.
Yep.
So I will see you folks later. Have a great one. And we'll see you guys perhaps Friday, unless, you know. No, I don't even want to say, I don't even want to jinx myself. Okay. Yeah. I'll see you guys Friday for a Friday live jam. Anything else, guy?
I was going to say, we'll keep you guys updated if plans change. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Please have a great one. Aloha, everybody.